Tony Hsieh, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So we just took this tour, of which we are apparently one of dozens of groups who come through here during the week. What is it about this place that people want to come see how you guys do what you do?
Well, for us, our number one priority as a company is company culture, and our whole belief is that if we get the culture right, then most of the other stuff like delivering great customer service or building a long-term enduring brand will just happen naturally on its own. And it's one thing to read about our culture, and it's another thing for me to talk about it, but really the best way to really get to know what it's like is to come and take a tour.
Does it export that culture, do you think?
Well, we're not actually trying to export our culture or really tell anyone else that their culture should be like ours. And in fact, one of the points of the book that I wrote that just came out, Delivering Happiness, is that they've done studies, and what actually matters is that you have a strong culture and that you have values that you commit to. And as it turns out, it actually doesn't matter what the values are. What matters is that you commit to them and the alignment that you get out of that. And that's the real power. And so part of what we're trying to show through the tours is once everyone is on the same page and you hire people whose personal values match the corporate values, then you can feel the energy that comes out of that.
It's worth a mention that when somebody started talking around here about corporate values and corporate culture, you were not the first guy to jump up and say, yes, let's do that. I mean, you say it yourself in the book.
Yeah, that's true. I think part of it is because so many corporations and companies have, they might call them values or guiding principles or so on, but the problem is usually they're very lofty sounding. They kind of read like a press release that the marketing department put out. They sound the same as their competitors, and maybe you learn about it on day one of orientation and it just becomes this meaningless plaque on the lobby wall. And so that was my personal resistance to it, and I think most other people's, because we didn't want to come up with something that was just a meaningless plaque. We wanted to come up with committable core values, and by committable, meaning we're willing to hire or fire people based on them independent of their job performance. And when you use that criteria, it's a pretty hard list to come up with. It took us a year to come up with it, and it wasn't just a group of senior executives that were spending a long weekend at an offsite coming up with something that sounded good. It was something that we really wanted to be able to walk the walk and be willing to hire and fire people based on it.
So how did you come up with those? Did you solicit from the group?
Yeah, so I sent an email out to the entire company asking people what our values should be, and got a whole bunch of different responses back, and we went back and forth for about a year and eventually came up with our list of 10 core values.
You famously do have 10 of them. They go from do more with less to be a little bit weird, to create a team environment and family spirit. Let me ask you this, though. If you had to pick one, if you had to, right, which one is the one?
It's really hard to pick just one. I think that's kind of like asking who your favorite child is. But I guess probably the one that's most relevant to business is about embracing and driving change. And there's so many examples of companies that have been around for a long time and then the world changes around them and they don't adapt to that because they've gotten used to how they've always done business, and then eventually they become irrelevant. So, there's a quote by Darwin that says something along the lines of, it's not the strongest or most intelligent of species that survives, it's the one that's most adaptable to change. And I think the same is true for business.
You have also said, and you write in your book, that what you really want, what this is all about, is happiness. You want people to be happy working here and as part of that, be happy in their own lives. How do you get there, though?
Well, I don't think there's a magical formula, because if there was, then I think everyone would just be happy in the whole world. I think what was interesting for me is a lot of the stuff that actually leads people to be happier is actually counterintuitive. And so I share kind of a Cliff Notes version of some of the stuff that I thought was most interesting. And then what's interesting is you can apply that to your business and making customers happy and employees happy as well. But one of the consistent things that has come out of the research on the science of happiness is that people are very bad at predicting what will make them happy on a long-term sustainable basis. Most people think, oh, once I get X, then I'll be happy, or once I achieve X, then I'll be happy, when the research shows that's just not true. There's studies of lottery winners. You look at their happiness level right before winning the lottery and then their happiness level a year later, and it's the same or even lower a year later.
So now I have to ask, you're running a billion-dollar gross sales company. You've got a best-selling book on the New York Times bestseller list. By all accounts, incredibly successful. You happy?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where happiness is much more about progress than it is about achievement. So it's more about, you know, whether it's for me or for the company, are we continuing to make progress? So yes, the answer is yes, we've continued to make progress, and you know, both in terms of affecting more people and this idea of delivering happiness, helping other companies make their employees happier and their customers happier, and we're making progress there. And then also from the financial side, you know, we first hit $1 billion in gross merchandise sales in 2008, and despite the economy, we've continued to grow over the past 24 months, and our Q1 this year is up almost 50% in terms of net sales versus the previous year. So that's progress. If our sales numbers were exactly the same as they are today 10 years from now, then we probably wouldn't be as happy.
So it's what I hear you saying is, yes, kinda I'm happy.
I'm saying that it's not something that once you achieve it, then you automatically have it forever. It's not a destination. It's an ongoing, I mean, kind of the cliche is it's the journey, not the destination. But it's actually, I think, maybe a better, more accurate way to phrase it is it's the progress, not the destination.
About that issue of progress, though, isn't it helpful if you want to make change and have progress to have a little bit of discontent, to have people not be satisfied, and then act on that?
Well, that's one way to do it, and you know that goes back, I think, to the difference between motivation and inspiration. So definitely you can motivate employees, and lots of corporations and books and consultants talk about how to motivate employees. You can motivate them through incentives. You can motivate them through recognition. A lot of companies motivate employees through fear. But our belief is that there's a huge difference between motivation and inspiration. And if you can inspire employees through a higher purpose that has meaning to them, that they believe in, and if you can inspire employees by creating an environment where the corporate core values match their own personal values, you can accomplish so much more than you otherwise would be able to, and you don't really need to worry about the motivation part of it. Yes, being discontent can motivate someone, but it doesn't really do much in terms of inspiring someone.
I have to ask you the productivity question, because we are here surrounded by people who are, many of whom are working, but there's another sizable group that's standing around chit-chatting. There's a party down the hallway that's been going on for an hour. How does all this affect actually day in and day out selling shoes?
Well, so probably the easiest analogy to or example to give is when we give orientation, when we do new manager orientations, we encourage new managers to spend 10 to 20% of their time outside the office. And so what you're seeing now, you know, consider that maybe outside, away from their desk might be a better term. But a lot of it is actually outside the office, whether it's you know, going bowling with your team or a happy hour with the people you work with and so on. And the initial reaction we get from new managers is, okay, that's great, sounds like fun, but there's a lot of work to do. How's exactly your question? What about all this work I need to do? What about productivity? And then we ask the managers, we survey the managers that have done it, how much more productive and efficient is your team because there's higher levels of trust, communication is better, people are willing to do favors for each other because they're doing favors for friends, not just coworkers. And the answers we get back range anywhere from 20% to 100% more productive. So kind of worst case scenario, you break even and you're having more fun doing it.
So you measure this by, you know, how quickly calls are picked up and how many more shoes you sell. I mean, there are metrics, right?
Depends on the department. Different departments have different metrics, and you know, some departments it's easier to measure than others. For example, within our merchandising team, it's very easy to look at sales, markdowns, inventory levels, inventory turn, and so on. But for other departments, there may not be as hard metrics that translate directly into the productivity of an employee.
Can you have happiness without profits?
I'm sure there's plenty of people in the world that the guy that's surfing all day, living on the beach, probably doesn't have much profits, but I'm assuming he's happy.
Yeah, but sadly, you're running a $1 billion company with 2,000 people working for you. Can you have happiness unless you're making money?
The subtitle of the book is A Path to Profits, Passion, and Purpose, and really, you need all three in order to have, and this is just supported by some of the research that I talk about in the book, but there's too many companies that focus only on the profits part of it, and that actually ends up hurting their ability to earn long-term profits on a sustainable basis and continue to grow as a company. And what the research has found is that if you actually have all three, you have profits and you have passion and you have higher purpose in the company, that's what enables companies to really thrive in the long term.
It's been a year or so since Amazon finished its deal to buy you guys. There was much consternation in the press and I imagine in the company about how that would change your culture. I would say that culture is probably intact, so let me ask you the counterintuitive question. Have you guys changed Amazon's culture at all?
Well, I think we're both... I'll preface it with saying that Amazon is not trying to change our culture, and we're not trying to change Amazon's culture. But at the same time, both of us have a lot to learn from each other. And so the way we've structured it is we think of Amazon as this giant consulting company that has a lot of resources that we have access to, but it's up to us to tap into it as little or as much as we want to, and we actually leave it up to each individual department or sub-department to determine how much they want to do that. So some departments, they will have maybe a half-hour phone call once a quarter to check in, and others, like, for example, our warehouse operations, there's a lot to learn from each other because we approached our warehouse operations pretty differently in a lot of cases. And so some of that of what we do has rubbed off onto Amazon and vice versa.
You and Jeff Bezos, though, the CEO of Amazon, how are you influencing each other?
We actually probably aren't much. Basically, from our point of view, since the acquisition, it's as if we swapped out our previous board of directors with the new one. And so instead of flying to San Francisco once a quarter, we now fly to Seattle once a quarter for the equivalent of board meeting. The meeting lasts 2 hours, so I get to see Jeff Bezos for 2 hours in a group setting once every 3 months.
Is that enough for you?
I don't really know him that well, so I wouldn't mind spending more time with him. Just regardless, even if I had nothing to do with Zappos, I think it'd be interesting to learn a lot from him.
So my wife was at Yahoo in 1998 and 1999, sort of the height of the craze of the dot-com internet thing.
What did she do?
She worked on their webmail product. She was the Yahoo Mail product manager for about 2 years. And so I spent a decent amount of time around their offices. And this vibe that you guys have here sort of smacks of what they had 10 or 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm going with this is that eventually Yahoo had to buckle down and become a serious company making serious decisions. Is this sustainable? Is this culture sustainable in a profit and loss world?
Well, I think ultimately it comes down to you need to do it all. You can't just have employees having fun at the expense of profits, long-term profits, but you can't do the reverse either. You can't just focus on profits and... if you want to use Yahoo as an example, how's their, I don't know the specifics of their performance or what their growth has been like, but I'm guessing that Google is probably doing better than they are.
So the question is, how is this sustainable, though? I mean, how do you do it? How do you keep this attitude and this mentality as you grow, as it becomes a much more serious operation?
Well, I think like anything else, it needs to be managed and top of mind. So for us, culture is the number one priority of the company. And I actually don't know of any other companies that have ever said, and specifically that culture is the number one priority, and actually put the actions behind it. There's a lot of companies that talk about culture being important, but it's not something that is even, you know, at talked about at board meetings or at management meetings, or when they look at the health of the company, they just look at their KPIs, or however they judge the health of the company is usually in terms of financials or other metrics, but you hardly ever see anything culture related, even if it's not a metric, on that same dashboard or report.
So does this work at a company like Goldman Sachs?
I think so. I don't know specifically about Goldman Sachs, but what the research has shown is that what matters is the alignment that you get out of people that have strong values, in where the value, their personal values match the corporate values. And so this specific environment here at Zappos probably would not be the right thing for Goldman Sachs or for 99% of companies out there. But again, we're not out there trying to say other companies should try to adopt the Zappos values and culture. All we're trying to say is that they should have their own values and really commit to them in order to build their own strong culture that's right for them.
It does seem, though, that what is being created here by virtue of your role in this company and the book you've written and your public profile is sort of a two-headed operation. You have this website that sells shoes and now clothing and cosmetics and all kinds of other things, and you have you, who has become an evangelist for this, who has written a book about it, who gives public appearances, who has people come to see him to consult with on core values and company culture. It does seem like what Zappos has now is two product lines.
Well, we actually have a separate entity called Zappos Insights, and that's what Zappos Insights is for. There's its own website, zapposinsights.com, and we help other companies develop their own values, figure out their own values, and develop their own strong cultures. Because one of the reactions we get sometimes is, okay, glad you have this strong culture, Zappos, happy for you, but this would never work in another industry, in a non-internet company, and so on. But we host two-day seminars, for example, where companies from all over the country or world even fly in, and we go through that process with them, and then they go back and implement changes. And then, for example, the Atlanta Refrigeration Company does refrigeration repairs out in the field. So in some ways, you can't think of a more opposite company.
They came here? The Atlanta Refrigeration Company?
Yep, they came here. And completely opposite company, opposite industry. They went back and after attending the Zappos Insights session, really focused on building strong company culture, focused on delivering better customer service and better customer experience to make their customers happier. And now they're reporting back that customers are happier, employees are happier, revenues are up, profits are up, and they sent us before and after pictures of their office environment. And it's just really neat seeing that this type of philosophy of using essentially happiness as a business model working in other companies and other industries.
Can you see a day when you say, all right, I've had enough of running this e-commerce company, and I'm going to go spin off Zappos Insights and run that full-time and export that?
Well, for us, we're not thinking of ourselves as an e-commerce company. And originally, 2003, we thought of ourselves, okay, let's build the brand to be about the very best customer service. And that's about making customers happy. And then we decided culture is going to be our number one priority, and that's about making employees happy. And so over time, we keep expanding the vision. And so now our vision and mission now is it's about delivering happiness and to the world. So yes, to our customers, to our employees, but now we're also spreading that to other companies. And so it's not really about spinning off. It's just about expanding the business and adding more and more different businesses. So, for example, Virgin is in music and airlines and so on, but it's all the Virgin brand. And so that's how we're thinking of for Zappos. We are, yes, we'll have an e-commerce business selling shoes and clothing and other product categories online. We have the Zappos Insights business, and there could be a Zappos Airlines 20 or 30 years from now that's just about delivering the very best customer service and customer experience in the air.
Will there come a day when you would be unhappy running this company? What might that be like?
What I've learned is things, it's very hard to predict the future, so anything is possible. I guess it's possible that tomorrow some secret spy assassin decides to, decides to go after everyone in Amazon, and some evil corporate people take over Amazon, then they come in here and break, you know, their promises because it's not the same people there anymore. That might not be fun.
So maybe.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. You don't care much about shoes. You never cared much about shoes.
No.
So why did you decide to run a shoe company?
Well, again, it goes back to how we think of the company. We don't think of ourselves as a shoe company. And internally, we say we're a service company that just happens to sell shoes and clothing and now a bunch of other product lines. But for me, my passion is about customer service and company culture, and that's really what Zappos is about.
Why are you so focused on culture and service? Where did that come from?
Well, the customer service part of it probably just comes from, I think we all, everyone, including myself, just on a daily basis has interactions in the real world with bad customer service. So it's probably just more out of annoyance than anything else. For company culture, it was because of my previous company that I had co-founded, Link Exchange. This was back in 1996. We ended up selling the company to Microsoft in 1998. And the number one reason why we ended up selling the company was because it just wasn't a fun place to work at anymore. We didn't know any better to pay attention to company culture. And, you know, I remember it was a lot of fun when it was just 5 or 10 of us. By the time we got to 100 people, it wasn't fun anymore. I dreaded getting out of bed in the morning, and that's really what led us to sell the company.
Where does Zappos go from here? I mean, you've talked about that a little bit, but now what are you going to do?
Well, for us, in the short term, we're making a big push into clothing. We started out in footwear, which we're doing about $1 billion in gross sales of every year now. In the U.S., apparel is 4 times the size of the footwear market, so in theory, that should keep us busy until at least $5 billion in gross sales.
It's clear sitting here with you talking that you are not like most of the people who work for you. You are not an extroverted guy. You're not one of those jump up and down at a party and go downstairs and sing karaoke. How did this company flow out of your vision?
I guess for me, I think of, well, here's an analogy, because people, I think at a lot of other organizations, if you think of companies as, like, imagine this greenhouse, and there's lots of plants, and then the leader is the tallest plant and strongest plant that all the other plants one day aspire to be, and that's a model that works at other organizations. For me, personally, I think of myself less as trying to be, you know, that tall plant, strong plant that all the other plants aspire to be, and more as the architect that designs the greenhouse that enables all these plants to flourish and enables them to become what was already within them. They just needed the right environment and conditions.
So is all this publicity, this interview and the book tour and Nightline and all the other media appearances and public speaking you've done, is that a little tricky for you? Is that a little difficult for you to get out there and do that?
Yeah, it's definitely not my preferred thing to be doing. I'm actually not the only, there's lots of other Zappos employees that go out there and do interviews and public speaking and so on. And whenever possible, I try to pass it off to another employee, but for some reason, you know, people want to talk to the title of CEO, and so it's that definitely is a challenge. It also presents a scaling problem, and so
how so? Yeah,
well, there's only one of me, so I can't do every interview and be everywhere, you know, at once, and I think, you know, it's a problem that a celebrity like Madonna has as well. And I think that actually a company that has figured it out, I don't know whether accidentally or it was planned, is Blue Man Group, right? Because you don't know if it's the same Blue Man and, or not. And so you can interview any Blue Man. So I don't know. Maybe that's a solution for us. We'll just all paint our...
We need Tony Shea masks, and you can all just go out and duplicate yourselves.
Right.
You set out to create a company where culture was everything and core values were everything. Have you done that?
I think there's always room for improvement. I definitely think that it's really great when the core values actually become a default way of thinking, and it's integrated and automatic and part of everyone's everyday language, and it's stuff that we don't even notice anymore. And it's when outsiders come and comment on it, or how we act, or if we weren't doing an interview and I was just having an internal meeting here with other employees, all the stuff you pointed out, we wouldn't have noticed. But obviously for you guys, you didn't notice it because it's different. But for us, this is just how it is.
Yeah. Why and how are you growing in the middle of a recession? I mean, this economy is still tough, and yet you're up 50% from a year ago.
Well, everyone knows that customer service is important, and nobody wants to work in a company that has a bad culture. So the question is, why don't more companies focus on customer service or company culture? And I think the reason is because the payoff is usually 2 or 3 years down the line, and most corporations are focusing on how to make the current quarter or the current year, and don't really have the patience to make investments that are going to pay off two or three years down the line. And if our only goal was to maximize 2010 profits, the correct thing to do would be to stop answering our phones, fire everyone in our call center. And I really don't think that would affect our top line at all, but it would definitely have a positive effect on our profits for 2010. But then we'd start hurting as word got out about it 2 or 3 years from now.
At one point, in fact, you considered outsourcing your call center, and you did outsource some of your logistics operations. Why have you brought everything back into house? Why aren't you taking the most profitable approach?
Well, for us, we realized that if we're going to build our brand to be about the very best customer service and customer experience, then we needed to control the fulfillment. We need to control the call center, and no one is going to be as passionate about our customers as we are ourselves, and so it made sense to bring it back in. And then I guess your question about profitability, it's really just a question of long-term versus short-term profitability. We definitely believe that by bringing it in-house, yes, it's going to be less profitable in the short term, but definitely more profitable in the long term over time.
Another core value question, since that is in large part what this company is built in. And then I'm thinking of core value number 3 here. It's create fun and a little bit of weirdness. So what's the weirdest thing you did today?
Weirdest thing I did today? Well, right before you guys showed up, we had a... Right. Well, you see all these conference rooms over here. They're decorated by our employees. And there was a photo shoot for something. I actually can't remember for what. And one of the photos they chose a random person who we happened to, by coincidence, be friends. And we've hung out sometimes outside the office. But they had him sit, and I was polishing his shoes, and they wanted that for the photo. Except they wanted me to swipe the very bristly brush back and forth, and he wasn't wearing socks, and so I think I gave him a rash during the whole thing. And the photography, most photographers want you to do multiple takes, and so it was a little awkward rubbing back and forth and giving him a rash on his leg, I guess.
It's a stunning contrast, actually, sitting here talking to you, because having read the book, I know you're a guy who likes to go out and have a gin and tonic and some drinks. You used to go to a lot of raves. You had a place in San Francisco where you bought a building and you set up the top floor and you turned it into a party headquarters, basically. And yet here you are, quite possibly the most soft-spoken CEO and not self-aggrandizing CEO that we've ever had on this broadcast. It's a little bit cognitively dissonant.
I'm not quite sure how to. I guess I've received that feedback before. So
yeah, and especially in this company, right, where everybody. I mean, I don't think there's two introverts in this whole place.
Well, I'm definitely at least 50%.
You're one of them. Yeah.
I mean, definitely, I'm definitely introverted by nature, and so. Yeah, stuff like doing these interviews or public speaking is not something that comes naturally or instinctually for me.
Is there a limit to good customer service?
In terms of what's financially feasible?
Well, the record for a customer service call in this place, it just set not too long ago, I guess. I can see it over there somewhere. 7 hours and 40-something minutes, right? I mean, it doesn't seem like a very effective use of labor.
Well, I guess it depends through what lens that you look through for that. Because, I'm sure probably for that one phone call, that one transaction, that doesn't make sense. But you're not the first person that's remarked on that stat. And that story has been told over and over again. And, I don't know. It's hard to assign metrics to what actual additional publicity or customers we've gotten because of that story being told.
Fair point.
But what our goal is to have more and more authentic stories be passed along, and we've grown mostly by word of mouth, and that's just another example of word of mouth.
Without looking, can you tell me what kind of shoes you're wearing right now?
Well, yes, because I only have one pair of dress shoes, so they're Donald Pliner.
Oh, man. Tony Hsieh, CEO of Zappos. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.